This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. We're back from vacation.
Yes,
sick of everything.
Yeah. Seriously.
Oh, man, we're due. I've just, Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA director, mm-hmm. was talking about the fact, and we said this a ways back because the people that we trust in the medical profession said it, but COVID's not going away.
Right.
It's going to be here in some form.
Right.
We'll manage it as a society.
Right.
In fact, we may be very close to, at this point, managing it.
Right.
Just because the Delta virus is so transmissible.
Mm-hmm.
But as he writes here in The Atlantic, listen to this. Mm. The biggest challenge in confronting the coronavirus's continual threat will be adapting our work, our leisure activities to turn an omnipresent virus into a manageable risk and seeing whether enough Americans can reach a political consensus on the practical and cultural changes that this will require. The current pandemic, by the way, he's talking about this and the flu, by the way. He's talking about both.
Right.
When the flu comes back and when a bad flu comes back.
Right.
He said, and the current pandemic has become a source of political division and decisions about how to handle it have to be evaluated through that prism. State-by-state differences in pandemic policy and in residents' openness to vaccination have produced regional variations in the scope of the pandemic. But the political coloring of disease-fighting precautions may fade as COVID-19 becomes a forever problem and as the need for a sustainable long-term plan to address that continued threat becomes evident. What I wonder from Gottlieb is, what does he mean by that?
Hmm.
Now, when I say because I believe it's right because of the variants out there that it's going to be around, it's not going away.
Right.
But when I'm saying it's so manageable, it's going to be small because as you increase the number of people, and by the way, he was saying this, Gottlieb was saying this over the weekend. That's why I find this article interesting. As opposed to what he was saying over the weekend, where he said, "Look, we've got 93% of people over the age of 65 that have gotten the first shot, closing in on 83% the second shot.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of those people, most vulnerable, will probably end up getting both,
right?
And boosters or whatever. So you've got that area, and as he mentioned, when it comes to the mandated vaccine for children in the United States, that only reaches 90%.
Mm-hmm.
10% of parents do not vaccinate their kids for mandated vaccines in the United States. So he said the fact that you have 75, and we're probably going to have between 80 and 90% of the population that eventually gets vaccinated. Well, then if you have the other portion of that group, that number one is not as much affected by COVID because they're younger, as we have seen, where it doesn't have the same destructive,
effects.
Effects. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. Mm-hmm. As the flu, for those in those younger ages, what does he see as a forever problem? That it's always going to be around, and you have to pay attention to the variant. That's fine. How do you change society that way? But that's
I guess, and my question would be, do you mean politically? Because as former FDA commissioner,
you're in part in that job. When he was commissioner, he understands you're part politician, right? Does he mean that politically it's always going to be in play? Because, or that, getting back to the science of it, that medically it's always going to be a concern. In other words, there will always be some form of COVID out there, and it will present a problem at times where there is an anomaly of a case, right? Where, okay, here is somebody in their mid-30s, no underlying conditions, and very healthy, and had COVID before and built a strong immunity with antibodies naturally, still got COVID and then got very sick later. And again, that's something we see in a number of viruses where there is an anomaly. It is, well, this person was fine, and then they were healthy, and then 3 days later, they were in critical condition, and we don't know why. But COVID is going to, you know, you look at the old adage, they still haven't found a cure for the common cold.
Well, the common, right.
You know, and so the common cold often leads to respiratory distress, and then pneumonia, and other very, very dangerous things.
Has it right here. The impact on productivity alone will demand that schools and businesses strengthen their defenses against all respiratory viruses. Mm-hmm. 2018 study in the journal Vaccine estimated that the economic cost of the flu tops $11 billion a year, including the indirect costs from lost productivity. That figure may be conservative. Other models have put the total burden as high as $87 billion. Past surveys have estimated the mean number of workdays lost from flu to be 3.7 to 5.9 days per diagnosed episode. Meanwhile, the cumulative annual impact from severe colds and other non-influenza viral respiratory infections stands at above $40 billion. Reducing these threats start with more aggressive efforts to get people vaccinated for the flu and COVID alike. What is it, about 50% for the flu? I just got mine, by the way,
It depends.
Saturday.
Yeah, in terms of efficacy, but I think, that's...
Well, not efficacy, by the number of people that actually, out of the total adult population that can get the flu, I think it's around 50%.
Oh, that are...
Eligible.
Exposed to it?
No, people that are, excuse me, eligible to get the flu vaccine.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
That's what
All
I mean.
Right. Yeah.
About 50%.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Work-related vaccine mandates for both diseases will become more common. By way of disclosure, I should note, this is Gottlieb, I serve on Pfizer's board of directors. For people in industries where telecommuting is possible, the calculus around going to work in person could also change. During peak flu and COVID season, businesses could encourage telework to reduce density in their offices. Conferences may be shifted to months when respiratory viruses are less prevalent. Businesses will make wider use of video conferencing to avoid crowded conference rooms, even holding Zoom meetings inside the office while people stay at their own desks. You see that happening outside of this? 5 years down the road? And let me use the 9/11 example of the World Trade Center, where they said 90% full now, because a lot of people there are young and don't even remember 9/11, so it's not a big deal to them.
Right.
As 5 years go by, we'll remember. And COVID is under control, if people are still getting shots.
Right. It's a good question, because it is the sensibilities are different in that if we were to hear about 9/11 every day, like we're now hearing about COVID every day in the news, would it change the mindset of individuals, whether they're, you know, renting office space or conducting business in major cities or getting on an airplane or things like that. Now, we do have daily reminders. Well, not necessarily daily reminders, but regular reminders, including the protocol by TSA put in place for security. But how many people actually still relate that to 9/11 actively in their mind? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to COVID and other diseases, have we become germophobes? And do we look at this and say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to get close to somebody because I don't know what they have? And has that changed our mindset, at least for the short term or even long term?
Then you look at, they talk about, you know, if you're sick, you should stay at home, things like that. In the future, they're talking about even more emphasis that if you're sick, to stay at home. And they go, buildings will undergo renovations to improve airflow and filtration. Modern buildings are sealed tight sometimes as part of an attempt to make them greener.
Hmm.
Now they should go blue, improving airflow and air quality by adding hospital-grade air handling and filtration systems. Medical practice will also change. Past work with other viral diseases suggests that we can successfully make drugs to combat the basic features of SARS-CoV-2 uses to reproduce and spread. If these efforts are any guide, we'll eventually have an antiviral drug that can be taken by mouth when people are first diagnosed with COVID to reduce symptoms. And so he's just going through the entire thing of what we will do with it and you know, talked about, you know, we'll have a drug probably like Tamiflu for COVID and all that. But it's just interesting because he goes through, you know, how we may change as a society because of all of it. Let me tell you this. So this is one thing I noticed this weekend. We really live in it. We live in a unique society.
Yeah, right.
When you observe it, and I sit there and I see Biden, you know, out there last week, you know, saying mandates, 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 and then all these football stadiums are packed with hundreds of thousands,
oh, yeah,
millions of people. Concerts are back again, people, and I'm just like, you're sending out two separate messages.
Right.
We said this about a month ago when people, you know, when we talked about it, we said, look, by the way, society's already moved on.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing people out there already.
Right.
Restaurants now are filling up. So you may have a certain segment of the population, but certainly if you saw the football stadiums over the weekend, the majority of people I saw in the stands were not masked. I know that in many of the stadiums, I know that I was paying attention, a friend of mine was tweeting from the Bills game yesterday, where they said nobody has to wear their masks in the stands, but as soon as you go into the concourse, you must wear your masks.
Yeah, right.
And the reporter said nobody is wearing their masks on the concourse. Nobody.
Okay, so we'll combine this with the what we were talking about earlier, and people not wanting to go back to work in the service industry because they don't want to work close to other people. Or is that just an excuse? Are they okay with going to a game with thousands of people sitting right next to them and then just making the excuse that they don't want to go back to work in a certain industry because they're too close to other people? These questions have to be asked. I don't know if we can ever get the answers, but think about that. In the way that we behave, because we do take inherent risks every single day. And I dare say a lot of those people that don't want to go back to, as one general manager of a restaurant told me, they don't want to go back to that because they don't want to work close with people. But they're probably going about their lives every day, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're not complete hermits. They're probably eating in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
They might be going to a concert. If their favorite artist comes to town, they might be going into. So they're selective about when they want to be close to people and when they don't. The fact of the matter is that I think we as a society have built a lot of excuses as to why we don't want to go back to work, as to why we don't want to do things. And we can just say, well, I fear, I fear, I fear.
Well,
and then when we want to do something, the mask is off and we're cheering our team on, or we're singing along with our favorite artist who's on stage, and we're in the middle of a crowd of thousands of people.
I will say this. When I went to New York last week, I was thinking that they're going to be a lot more locked up than Texas.
Mm.
I saw fewer people again. Remember last time I was back?
Mm-hmm.
Again, fewer people with masks on in New York than I see here in Texas in mm-hmm. the retail stores.
Right.
And I'm talking about the retail stores where it's not mandated.
Right.
In Tarrant County. I know, is Dallas County mandated now still? Because I went into one place over the weekend.
It's almost like a voluntary mandate.
Okay. Is it a voluntary mandate?
Well, it's a lot of companies are still. But the thing is that I walked into one grocery store, and they were handing out masks to people walking in, and they had a sign on the door. We ask that you wear a mask. half the people weren't wearing the masks.
Okay.
They weren't taking the masks. And again, you know, this puts us in a situation where we are going about our lives, and we may be making some, maybe making excuses as to why we don't want to go back to work. But I think that's more of a, for some, not all, a convenient excuse. The moment our team goes, you know, back on the field or our favorite artist comes to town, the mask is off and we're out there screaming.
Yeah, did anybody notice that over the, I mean, I thought it was interesting that Biden, all right, mandate, doggone it, we need to.
Yeah.
Stadiums all over the place.
Exactly.
There was more concern for the cat.
Yeah.
At the Miami Stadium.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Thank goodness that cat was all right.
Man.
That was amazing, wasn't it? That if you haven't seen the video, the cat
that
fell off the upper deck.
Oh,
looked
man.
Like a feral cat or a stray cat.
Right, right.
And was hanging on for dear life.
It wasn't a large cat, too. It was a kitten.
Yeah. Oh. And they people held an American flag, caught him in an American flag.
Yep. Saved the cat.
The
cat
kitty
is
cat
okay.
was okay, yes. But no, the people in the state, I just thought, anybody noticing this?
Well, we're getting back to the season where a lot of people go indoors for parties and gatherings and,
yep.
you know, and football season, of course, and you throw all that into play, and it's like, is anybody listening to the mandates?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Did you know that up to half of all major engine failures are due to poor cooling system maintenance? That's a lot of downtime and can cost drivers big. You expect a lot from your engine, which is why the cooling system must be a part of your maintenance routine. Here's a tip to keep your cooling system in shape and your engine running smooth. Most cooling system issues are due to lack of coolant caused by leaks. Perform a pressure test to make sure no leaks are present. While this may cause the system to fail, you want it to fail in the shop, not on the road. If your pressure test uncovers any leaks in the system, find a TA truck service near you to have them repaired by a professional technician immediately.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Ed in Las Vegas quickly. Ed, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, the number of people that have died of COVID, 75% are over 65, and the people under 65, I mean, Biden's not going to be able to really pressure that many people. I mean, unemployed, students, people work for smaller companies, gig workers. You know, people work in the home, house husbands, homemakers. I mean, the notion he's going to twist the arm of all sorts of people, I mean, most of the people aren't going to be subject to his edicts.
Most of the people most at risk will not, when you have 93% now of those over the age of 65 that have gotten the first shot. That demographic, probably you've gotten as far as you possibly can to getting those people vaccinated. So if you're talking about targeting employers, you're targeting much younger people who may not be as, you know, still though, when you get down to 40 or 50, you still are at what? 70%?
Right. Well, how many companies with 105 employees are going to drop down to 99 employees or less by, you know, outsourcing their sales force or
that may happen.
Outsourcing their
IT. Oh, yeah.
You'll have
what Biden's doing.
Yeah, you'll have
keep up the good work.
Thanks,
Ed. We appreciate it. You'll have companies that have 200 or 300 employees deciding, well, we're just going to become three small companies. And we'll have fewer than 100 employees each. That happened during the Affordable Care Act. If we are over by a certain amount, well, we'll just break the company up. And that's, you know, again, this is there are workarounds, but the difference is now, post-COVID, there really is kind of a cultural war going on here, and business owners aren't all just going to lay down.
This whole thing wouldn't happen without Putin's permission. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. What else is going on in D.C.? There's a headline from TheHill.com. Democrats see $3.5 trillion spending plan is slipping away.
Oh, no. Please don't let it slip away.
Well, I was getting hopeful there for Manchin. He said $1 trillion. Okay, yeah. Maybe $1.5
trillion.
Like, wow, how easily you go between $1 and $1.5 trillion. How easy. It's like, okay, $500 billion lower or $500 billion higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's insane.
Democrats, by and large, feel confident that President Biden's ambitious human infrastructure agenda has strong public support and that a majority of Americans favor raising taxes on corporations and the wealthy to help pay for it. But there's also recognition that moderate Democrats in swing states and districts need to show they're shaping the emerging reconciliation package. But when you have Manchin say, nope, $1 trillion, not even half, less than half, $1 trillion, $1.5 trillion.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Manchin on Sunday, this liberal circular firing squad at work, Manchin on Sunday responded to criticism from AOC, who claimed in a tweet that Manchin has huddled weekly with personnel from Exxon, contending that such attacks continue to divide. During an appearance on CNN, Manchin denied having any such meetings with Exxon or any fossil fuel companies or lobbyists. Absolutely not. I keep my door open for everyone, everybody. It's totally false. He also said superlatives such as the one used by Ocasio-Cortez are just awful and continue to divide. I don't know that young lady that well. I really don't. I met her one time, I think, between sets here, but that's it. But we have not had any conversations. She's just speculating and saying things because she wants to. Meanwhile, House Democrats are looking for a 26.5% tax rate.
Huh.
Biden is looking at 28. Mm-hmm. The House is looking at 26.5%. Manchin is looking at 25. As we said when Trump did it, because the corporate tax rate would not be as low as it is without Trump.
Right.
No, when he got it, when he got it to 21%, we said it will be impossible for Democrats. The great victory there, it would be impossible for Democrats to get it back up to 35%. And you see with the debate going on here.
Well, remember early on after Trump was able to get it to 21, and I think it was Pelosi who in a discussion said, well, we'd like to see it at 25. And we said, well, gosh, if they're only saying 25. If Pelosi's only saying 25 and Trump was still president then it tells you the effect on it. Now, having said that, if the president wants 28 and Manchin wants 25, they'll meet in the middle and they'll go 35. But it's I still say today that I never would have believed that the Republicans would have been able to get it below 30.
And no, I know. Yeah.
And to get it to 21, we've been very clear all along. We credit Trump for that. The Republicans had to help, but the Republicans have been so weak without him. I suspect they would have aimed for 33. You know, and that's the problem.
Okay, what's going on here now?
What?
Because we talked about the why aren't House Democrats. Mm. Why aren't they going for 35% on corporations? Why are House Democrats looking at the top capital gains tax rate at 25% from 20 and not what Biden wanted, which is significantly less than the increase that Biden proposed? What did Biden propose? They don't have here. On capital gains. Was it 30%? Was it 29?
No, I think it was. Wasn't it also 28%? I'll have to go back and look. Yeah. I don't remember the number. But it was
I thought it was here. Yeah. I thought it was here because I was looking at the 37, but they're talking about the highest income tax rate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, look, you're going to, they know full well you're going to hurt investment. They know this. And so the idea is to do what? Don't jump to 35 now. Jump to 25 now, and you still have your problem in place that, again, the wealthy aren't and the corporations aren't paying their fair share.
All right, he would. He wanted capital gains to go to what the top income tax rate would be.
And how much was it? And what was that? What was the number?
The top income tax rate would have been under the proposal they wanted, 39.6%.
Okay.
So if you were, well, that would be over if wherever you were in the income tax would be what you paid in capital gains.
Right. It would just be aligned with.
It'd somehow be aligned.
Well, no, this is something that's been the calling from the left for a long time. That the capital gains tax should be exactly, and they should have, in fact, I've heard them talk about the same types of brackets. In other words, okay, you earn this, and you pay this, and you basically turn it in to mimic the income tax. But the thing is that the capital gains tax is about investment. And so, okay, are you going to punish even long-term investment?
Well, let me ask you this. Are Democrats, because of everything Biden is doing, are Democrats concerned about the economy?
I think they are, but I think also the ones who aren't know that you don't solve the crisis all at once, right? So right now you go for 25 or whatever it is, and then later you go for 28, and then later you go for 32, and then later you go for 35. Because they all know that it hurts. You raise the capital gains tax, it's going to hurt investment. You raise the corporate tax, they're going to pass that along to the consumer. Those prices are going to go up. And I think on corporate taxes right now, the biggest concern would be inflation, because you have more and more people talking about inflation being here for a while. It is not going to go away. It's likely not going to settle anytime soon. And the last thing you want to do is start moving right now to something that will be very, very, very impactful on the cost of goods and services. And that is raising the corporate tax rate.
You saw that Kroger, the head of Kroger, came out and said inflationary pressure on prices is going to continue. Prices should be expected to rise another 2-3% in the second half of this year, according to Kroger. CFO Gary Millerchip said on Friday, adding Kroger will be passing along the higher cost to the consumer where it makes sense to do so.
Well, they can, in other words, what we've always said, to the point that the market will bear.
Right.
And then what do? They have to cut costs. And right now, when there's a labor shortage, I don't know what you do to cut costs, but I mean, they're going to have to do that. That's the only two things they can do. They have to protect their margin, and they can pass it along to a certain extent. But can they do that if they were to not worry, if they had no concern, right, of the impact of passing along those prices? Exactly what would it look like? What would the cost of goods and services look like? Those companies do have to adjust because they all have to remain competitive. They do it in different ways. Sam Walton, his was about a proprietary supply chain, still is really in effect. Amazon, much in that same line. You're trying to be competitive. You're doing everything you can to control costs for the consumer to be competitive as possible. And that is also in play when inflation hits, when other things, you know, hit that you really can't control. You're going to have to go out of your way to incentivize your customer base and do everything that you can to keep them loyal. And I don't know how you do that with the type of inflation that we might be seeing over the next few quarters. It's going to be extremely difficult. to say the least.
Well, with the tight labor market, and we've talked about this when it comes to immigration, because you and I have talked about it for years. Trump talked about it when he was having his argument with Jim Acosta, when Acosta finally got kicked, the press conference where he got kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's where Trump was making it clear, look, I'm not against legal immigration. We're going to need the legal immigration to fill the spots in the economy.
Right.
Because of the job increase will be increasing so much. That was completely and totally forgotten that mm-hmm. that was being done. Acosta was trying to do his normal thing of, you know, basically saying that Trump is a xenophobe. Because I'm not right. against immigration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm against immigration that helps the country mm-hmm. and people that can get, you know, that jobs here, because when the economy grows, we're going to need the jobs, and the workforce here is shrinking.
Right.
You know, we've talked about this many times before, about the fact that there isn't going to be another baby boom. Women are not going to come into the workforce.
And now you got to add the whole COVID effect to it.
The whole COVID effect that we have seen now. And so the question is, if you don't have enough workers, it's the exact same as if you don't have cheap electricity, or
right.
you don't have,
right.
or you don't have natural resources.
Right.
Companies move.
Right. They have to. They have to. If they can't produce, if they don't have enough people to do that, they have to go elsewhere. I don't know what the service industry does. I really don't. There's only so much you can automate.
Did you see the story out there also that young men just are not going to college?
Right. Yeah. Well, if you're not going to college and you don't want to work with your hands, you know, you're going to have to be extremely creative or
a hard worker to move up in the service industry.
Or you're just going to have to show up every day. I mean, that sounds simplistic, but I mean, for a lot of people, that's really hard.
Can we do that here? Just show up.
Just show up.
What do you feel like? Do you feel like doing anything today? Or?
Just show up. Just be there.
You want a cup of coffee?
I've had two already.
We have these microphones in front of us, but do we really have to do something?
Mm.
We could do half the work, right?
Yeah, probably. Most people think we already do half the work.
Does anybody really care what we have to say? If we talk half as much, would they really care?
I think, you know, it really will be interesting to see what the impact is. Is it generational? We can compartmentalize certain things already in terms of the mentality of any given worker as generational. We can already do that. But is it the same, I guess, mentality that would also drive some to move away from their old line of work or change completely their mentality after COVID? You know, I mean, is it as we asked earlier, is it that their drive has gone away, or did they actually ever have any drive to go out and, you know, make a career?
Well, as you said it before, is this generational? When you said it before, I meant me too. You said if I'm 25, I'm working two jobs.
If I were 25 in these conditions right now, I'd be working at least two jobs. There is no doubt, because I'd be looking for every offer that's out there, and I'd have at least two.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I have to ask that question again, though. Is it generational? Because you had said it off the air, and then we said it on the air. But
yeah.
when you had said earlier, you said, if I was 25 years old, I'd be working two jobs with the way the work environment is, with a college education or without a college education.
Yeah.
Unless a college education was paying such big of a salary where there was mandatory overtime where I couldn't work a second job.
Well, but yeah, I mean, if you want to get into a decent career right now and you're a young person, I would say go to work and show up every day and look for those companies. I mean, there are countless stories out there saying we want to train people to be managers, and the managers are making six figures. And in the restaurant industry, I'm not saying it's easy work. It isn't. But these companies are paying managers, and the managers who show up and that are reliable, just be there and be reliable. And, you know, and you're going to have a career. I'm not going to say for as long as you'd like, but likely for as long as you want to work. And it is just, I think right now, an interesting dynamic to look at when there's so many openings everywhere you look. Help wanted signs in our area.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. We're back from vacation. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream live. Get our app, put it on your phone, listen 24/7, 365, because our podcast is our show, and our show is our podcast, and our app is our podcast and our show.
That's true. Whatever you said.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's start with the poll. Majority of Americans are angry.
You're darn right we are.
When asked about how things are going in the country, a CNN survey released Friday found the survey taken between August 3rd and September 7th. That's a long survey.
Yeah.
Asked respondents how they feel about the way things are going in the country today. About three quarters of Americans, 74%, indicated anger.
Yeah.
Of those, 48% said they are somewhat angry. 26% said they are very angry. Just over a quarter, 26%, said they are not angry. The rest,
I don't know.
Are you angry? I don't know.
Additionally, 69% that said things in the country are going pretty/very badly under President Joe Biden's leadership.
Okay.
While 31% said very/very well. Of those, 2% said things are going very well.
Okay.
I'd love to talk to those people.
Yeah. Hey, you two. Hey, you two over there in the corner. Come here. We got some questions for you. What do you mean very well?
You know, it was interesting because you and I talked about it. I know we had talked about this before we actually went on vacation, about the hypocrisy of the Democrats when it comes to 9/11 and the whole thing of never forget. And you saw that all over social media. Mm. Everybody's saying never forget, never forget, never forget. And as we said beforehand, it's not whether you remember or whether you don't remember. I mean, it really doesn't take a lot to doesn't take a lot to remember 9/11.
Right.
Anybody has the capability of remembering 9/11. Hey, I didn't forget. Think about that. That's that's really something to be proud of. I got a badge on. I didn't forget.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations. One of the worst terrorist attack act of war in United States history, and you didn't forget. Well, congratulations. Would you like a medal for that? The not forget medal? See, it's not whether you forgot or didn't forget. It is whether you support and encourage the behavior to go after the enemy that attacked us on September 11th.
Right.
And so when we see Biden out there, who has abandoned Americans and allies and given up and pretended that the war against Islamic radicalism doesn't exist anymore, that's the impression he's trying to give out to the American people. That gets us a little angry. When you have, and I'm reading here from the New York Post, the husband of the only female New York City police officer who died on 9/11 slammed politicians who are against the police. James Smith blasted politicians that are anti-police in an interview. Smith was certain that the very politicians who were calling defunding the police would be photographed with their arms around heroes and trying to bask in the reflected glory of what my wife and other officers did. By September 12th, they'll be back to defunding the police. I have no intention of being anywhere near it. I couldn't watch it the other day.
No.
I couldn't watch it. No. I couldn't watch it because of the hypocrisy. These are police-hating people who, when they can use police for their own political purposes, which is very convenient for them on 9/11,
yeah,
they'll do it, but they don't give a damn about the police. And as we have said before we went on vacation, they spit on the graves of those who died on 9/11. Biden did. And the people that support Biden and his administration did,
and they will
by their
again.
Actions.
And they will again.
Yep.
And to use them as a prop
right.
on 9/11 was frankly maddening.
And before you say, Gary, how dare you try, and Gary and Eric, how dare you try to divide people? We're not dividing. We're observing the people that are dividing. We're not dividing at all. We supported the police beforehand, and we support the police beforehand. We don't lie about the police. We don't take a police incident and extrapolate it out to say that all police are systemically racist or all police departments are systemically racist. We don't try to instill racial hatred in people by telling a lie. The Democrats do. The liberals do. They're the ones who are dividing. As I told you, I did see over the weekend, well, for those people bringing up all the division in the country, you're dividing as well.
Uh-huh.
No, you're not.
Hmm. Yeah.
If you acknowledge and you observe those that are actually dividing, that's not divisive.
No. No, it is not. I think it's very important. It's crucial that we point this out again and again, their behavior. And as we predicted, we asked, okay, after Afghanistan and the botched withdrawal and the loss of 13 service members at the hands of the enemy, but because this president, you had to wonder, what's he going to do on 9/11? What does he do? How does he make a speech? Well, you pre-record it. That's what you do. You put it out. You don't talk to the media. And you make your appearance on 9/11, but you don't talk to the media.
And you don't talk to anybody.
And this is and that's who this president is. He doesn't care. The consoler in chief. Give me a break. Anybody who gave him that title, anointed him after Afghanistan, there's no way you can let him keep that title. I believe he was never that person. That was all a show.
No, it was all show.
Anytime this, right. You know, he's a man of compassion. No. He doesn't care about American lives.
Him walking away from the podium as many times as he did,
yes.
Not willing to take questions in an extremely tragic time for for America, losing those servicemen and women, to just turn around and walk away and put his back to the American people. Sorry, but you're president because you answer tough questions in those times.
And becoming annoyed and defensive when he was questioned. You know, the Afghan refugees and being asked about the ones who fell from thousands of feet in the air. Man, that was 4 or 5 days ago. I mean, if you have any question as to who this guy is, you just either haven't been looking or you're delusional. But to pretend that he cares for the American people, that's just, you're just, that's flat out false. There's just no way to make that point. This guy is all about himself, always has been. His public service wasn't public service, isn't public service. He's not a public servant. He's a Biden servant. And anything that benefits him and or his family is his only concern.
I want to make it clear that a lot of people, I understand a lot of people that put never forget. I understand that they don't ever want to forget. And what it means to them, never forget, is the fact that, you know, we continually remain vigilant to go after the enemy. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't stand is the virtue signaling with no thought process after the fact that never forget means that you have to acknowledge that an enemy exists out there and you have to be honest with the American public about who that enemy is.
Well,
because it's just been, and I will say, you know, look, and it's the same as I said with the NFL. The NFL going overboard, because I saw it. I saw the beginning of it. I heard it was coming up. Wait till you see the beginning of it and the tribute to the troops and the Star Spangled Banner and everything else. And, you know, and the loss of all the first responders from the NFL that enabled the racist philosophy of Black Lives Matter against police over the last 5 years. I'm sorry, it doesn't cut it with me.
No.
I'm not giving the NFL a pass on their enabling the racism of Black Lives Matter, and by enabling the racist, becoming racist themselves by doing so.
And again, take a moment on 9/11 and around the anniversary of 9/11 to use those who serve their communities as props. What they have done.
I didn't feel good by seeing. I know that you and I talked in our pre-show meeting. We had the exact same reaction. We were infuriated by it.
Well, because I was, you know, throughout the week reading more and more stories about first responders on that day from their family members, from the people they served alongside. And it just makes it all the more maddening.
And reading the transcript, by the way, that was not recorded from Todd Beamer. That was basically what the 911 operator, you know, had. She, you know, redid it in her mind what it actually was from Beamer. She recalled it. It's what she recalled.
Mm-hmm.
But when he started reading from, you know, he knew the Bible and was reciting from the Bible and understood what was going on and knew what they had to do. When you realize that you went from an ordinary civilian to a soldier like that, a soldier knowing you were going to die for your country without question.
You know,
and then you see these people lie to the American public. When you see the president lie to the American public about our enemy, those two things, it drove me crazy over the weekend. I was not in a good mood. I'd only told one person. I'm telling everybody now. I told you, but I only told one person. I said, you know, I'm in a real, just in case you think I'm in a nasty mood, I am in a nasty mood. I just can't handle this hypocrisy on 9/11. I just can't do it anymore. I can't handle the virtue signaling that, you know, never forget. And go, what does that even mean anymore to people? Because we have forgotten. Not all, but a significant portion of the population is virtue signaling. Oh, I remembered. What the hell does that mean? Does it mean that we acknowledge the enemy?
Right.
Does it mean that you know, does it mean, I mean, do we serve those people who, do we serve the Todd Beamers? Do we serve the hundreds upon hundreds of first responders? Do we honor the service of those servicemen and women who died in Afghanistan by just remembering their sacrifice? Or do we acknowledge that the enemy is out there, and do we owe it to them to always be going after that enemy and the mindset of that enemy?
You know, it's I read a story about one of the two fighter pilots that at that moment became willing to sacrifice their own life because they realized they were going to have to take down Flight 93. Most likely, they were going to have to do that. Her name is Heather Penny. And she was a fighter pilot at the time. Now, the plane went down before they reached it. But they knew what the mission was. And she did not have a weapon on her jet. It was a suicide mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that mentality in these people who you know, serve. And what they must have gone through in those moments. And they realized everything that was before them and what was going to happen, what was going through their mind in those moments. And then the people on Flight 93, the people on those other planes and what they were going through in their final moments. And to have a president who will just blatantly, repeatedly, lie to the American people. And then, as we're getting out of Afghanistan, work with the enemy as he leaves Americans behind in Afghanistan is flat out disgusting.
Spitting on the graves of everybody who died on 9/11 and those who fought afterwards.
Repeatedly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey offers his forecast for the remainder of the 2021 Atlantic hurricane season.
With 13 named storms already, I expect we'll end up somewhere in the 20s in terms of total named storms. And in all likelihood, some more of those systems will reach the U.S. mainland as we head through what appears to be another very active hurricane season.
Compared to last year's record setter of 30 named storms total, 12 of those making landfall on the U.S., and 6 of those hurricanes. Named storms so far reaching the U.S. mainland include
tropical storms Claudette, Danny, Elsa, Fred, Henri, and most recently Mindy. Ida, of course, being the only hurricane to hit the U.S. mainland so far this year.
Several other significant systems have caused impacts to locales outside the U.S. One example, Category 3 Hurricane Grace, making landfall recently in Mexico's east coast. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in on the show.
California recall election tomorrow.
Oh yeah. And you see Los Angeles Times columnist Gene Guerrero on Sunday on CNN's Reliable Sources said that California Republican gubernatorial candidate Larry Elder had a, quote, white supremacist worldview. Okay. Which made him a real threat to communities of color.
Uh-huh.
That was said last week. We were on vacation, too. Somebody else said that. That
right.
He is the black face of white supremacy.
Yeah. Wow. They really are desperate.
I know.
Well, it makes you wonder if they believe those same polls that they're promoting. The leftist promoting polls that show that Newsom is ahead. And, you know, if you were to ask me just on the surface, I mean, it looks, I would say that there's a better than decent chance that Gavin Newsom will still be governor of California when all is said and done after the vote on Tuesday.
And we've said that since the very beginning.
But, you know, so why did they feel it's necessary to go after Larry Elder in that way? Is it just their nature? They couldn't help it? I guess so.
Because race, you've got to bring up the race card.
Right.
Even if it's somebody who is black. So you call a black man a white supremacist.
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
I don't either. Here's your forecast.
Tropical Storm Nicholas has coastal Texas on alert. The system is offshore the coasts of northeastern Mexico and south Texas today. and will be moving onshore along the coast of South or Central Texas tonight, and will move onshore later tonight and early into tomorrow. Maximum sustained winds with the system now just 40 miles an hour, but rainfall totals could exceed 20 inches with the system. Later today into tomorrow, tornadoes are possible, being spawned by the system, especially from middle Texas. Elsewhere, after somewhat cooler temperatures east of the Mississippi for the past couple days, we'll see an increase in temps across the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic, with temperatures 15 to 20 degrees above normal. Southwest Arizona and lower Colorado could see those 110-degree temperatures again today. Look for heavy thunderstorms along I-80 in Pennsylvania, extending to the New York border. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. A new report from Politico and Biden's own words have renewed concerns about how tightly the nation's commander-in-chief is handled by his staff. White House staffers are on pins and needles when Biden speaks publicly, fearing that he will field questions from reporters afterwards and muddle the West Wing's carefully crafted messaging, according to Politico. The president's advisors try to manage him tightly, telling him to either decline to answer or field just a few questions shouted out by reporters, the report said. So if people are wondering that when the president comes out and says, they told me not to take any questions, they told him, don't take any questions.
And of course, he's defiant and says, I'm going to take one anyway. You know, this is...
No, but, you're right.
This is, but this is exactly what's going on with him. No one can confront or question him without pushback, including those closest to him. All presidents are advised. They sit around and they'll decide, okay, look, am I going to take questions today on this? Am I going to come out? What are we doing here? We're going to make a statement, and this is going to be the statement. Don't take any questions, or if you do take any questions, only go to these reporters, and we're prepared to answer what we already know they're going to ask, whatever it is. But for Biden, things are changing. I'm confident things are changing on the fly with him, and that doesn't stop, because he'll come in and they'll say to him, well, okay, we're not taking questions. What do you mean I'm not taking? Well, we don't want you to take questions. Well, what, you think I can't take questions? Because he's always challenging people. And so I'm certain he's creating nothing but a massive problem inside the White House for his advisors and team of, I guess, advisors trying to make him competent for at least a few minutes at a time.
Well, and then it was a couple of weeks ago. Remember when they turned off his microphone?
Yeah, right.
Remember when I said, my God, did they turn off his microphone?
Yeah.
They do. Right here. This is from Politico. Now, not a conservative or Republican magazine in any way. When Biden gives public remarks, this is directly from Politico, some White House staffers will either mute him or turn off his remarks, according to White House officials. So they do it on purpose. If he starts going back and forth a reporter, they will cut him off.
Yeah.
It's not that they're indifferent to what their boss has to say. Indeed, their livelihoods are directly invested in it. Rather, they are filled with anxiety that he's going to take questions from the press and veer off the West Wing's carefully orchestrated message. One current official said, I know people who habitually do not watch it live for that reasons. For that reason, excuse me. They don't want to watch it. They cannot bear to watch it live because they're so afraid of the mistakes that he's going to make. So understand that. I think it's very important to understand from that political article that when he's out there saying, I've been told not to take questions, he has been told, as we have said, he has been told by his staff, don't take questions. And then you see, as you said, and I think you're right on this, his Izzy Mandelbaum.
Yeah, he wants to challenge everybody.
If anybody doesn't know, you have to watch
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld to see Izzy Mandelbaum. Yeah. But as Izzy Mandelbaum comes out, how dare you tell me what to do? I think that when he's saying it, I was told not, but I'll take questions anyway. I think that's his own form of defiance, I'm the boss. Who are these people telling me that I can't handle my job?
Exactly.
That'd be the reaction of all of us, right?
Well, the thing is that they would imagine this. So they're in their meeting before he goes out. Okay, you're not going to take any questions, Mr. President. Well, who are you to tell me I'm not going to take questions? This is who he is now. Well, what we're saying is that we think you're running great. Well, I can take questions. Why can't I take questions? And that's who Joe Biden is. And so he gets out there. They tell me I can't take questions, but I'm going to take questions. And then he says, and then the question is on Afghanistan. Well, I'm not taking any questions.
Exactly. And then he walks away.
Exactly. I mean, it's got to be impossible. It has to be impossible. I don't know what you do if you're a staffer at that level, because my first inclination would be quit. Walk away. It's an impossible job. It can't be. I cannot do the job I'm supposed to do. But then you think to yourself, well, neither can anyone else here because of him. And he's going to be forever defiant. That's just who he is. And I mean, if you walked up and said, well, that's a very nice blue tie. Well, I'm capable of wearing a red tie. You know that, right? I mean, he's just going to challenge everyone. We said this last year during the entire campaign season. The four times that he made an appearance, was it four or five? But at the times that he made an appearance, he was defiant, whether it's to a reporter or one of the workers on the assembly line there in Detroit. He screamed at that worker. He was arguing with a guy whose vote he was trying to earn. Who does that? Well, the same guy who, in response to a question, what about those poor souls who fell from that plane leaving Afghanistan? The same guy that says, well, that was 4 or 5 days ago. He's defiant. He's bitter. I don't know what's causing it. I can't tell you. But that's who he is. And that explains everything about his behavior in front of a microphone. And in general, as president of the United States. It's frightening. It is frightening to think that this guy is going to be commander-in-chief for at least the next 3.5 years.
And now where do we go with the executive order? And where does OSHA go for people who maybe just be waking up? We discussed this earlier on the show about clearly the executive order is illegal.
Yes.
Just like the CDC's order on the eviction moratorium was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
This is clearly illegal. OSHA is supposed to regulate what happens in a plant.
Right.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Right.
Is there dangerous things in the plant?
Right.
That could affect your health inside the plant.
That are
caused
to that work environment,
right,
and the behavior of people who conduct business in that work environment.
And the danger caused by the company,
right,
that you work for.
Right.
You know, this is a, from what we know, a rulemaking proposition, which means if it goes through the normal process, it could take weeks, it could take months through the normal process.
Right.
It could take months, possibly years if they try to expedite it through, which they may try to do. I don't know how long it would take, but if you try to do that, that's more likely to be overturned by a court,
right,
stating you need to go through the normal rulemaking process here,
right,
which would include putting it into the register.
Federal Register.
Register, going through the Federal Register, and then also a public comment period.
Right.
Why did he do it? I believe he is doing anything he possibly can to unify his base. He believes that his base are Democrats that believe in the vaccine and Democrats that believe in abortion.
Yeah.
That's why you had Democrats lie about the Texas law. The Texas law does not overturn Roe v. Wade, not even close to.
No.
Here, I believe the courts will overturn it. But the courts, we've got this question already. Why hasn't anybody filed a lawsuit? Because there's no rule.
You haven't written it yet. It hasn't. There's nothing to
file suit against.
There's nothing to challenge yet. It has to happen. You have to write the rule. And then at that point, there has to be standing by whatever party is harmed. And you will likely see that happen as soon as a rule hits. Now, the thing about it is the process is if they go through the actual process, of it being in the Federal Register and then the public comment period, then there is a final rule that is made. Okay, so it is a proposed rule, and then after the public comment period, there could be some changes, and then there is a final rule, the final rule to be published. When the final rule is published, that's when you would see the lawsuits. But we have to go through the process. And I don't know if they're going to look to expedite that because the public comment period actually takes weeks or if not months. And then they go through, again, the consideration. Keep in mind, this is bureaucracy at work, so it moves at the speed of molasses. And it could be months. It could be, my gosh, maybe next summer before a final rule issued
if the normal process is
if they follow the process. And so then again, once that happens, then you're going to see the challenges.
And that's the first thing I thought when he said, well, go to OSHA, rule change. Well, they can't do that immediately.
No,
that has to go through the process. How are they going to be able to expedite that through the courts?
Now,
and that would that pass
now they,
federal
they you know, other administrations have tried this in a rulemaking process, and then the courts have said to them, well, on a procedural issue, they just made a judgment on the procedural issue alone. You didn't go through that proper procedure, and I could see this administration being led by Biden saying, well, no, we felt that it was in the public interest to bypass the public comment period and expedite this rule in order to make it effective and protect the American people. But then the court would come back and say, at least one member of the court, I believe, would probably come back and say, well, wait a minute, you're not protecting the American people because you're only applying it to certain businesses, not all. So,
yeah, I view this as a symbolic act of Izzy Mandelbaumism.
Yeah, no, I think so.
Seriously, I mean,
no, because
I've got to act tough.
Because
we're sick of this.
Right. Well, and you know, we don't like the process, but we have to go through the process, and we're working on that to get it done as fast as possible and blah, 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 as if he's doing something.
Right.
Give him something to do. This is his version of busy work. Yeah. And then knowing that the courts would probably overturn it if it becomes a final rule, and then he can just blame it on the courts. This is why we need change the Supreme Court and blah, blah, blah.
He didn't care if it was unconstitutional what the CDC did. He didn't care with the eviction moratorium. He didn't care.
No, he didn't.
It got him angry.
Right.
How dare there's a constitution to get in the way. I should be able to do whatever I want.
Right. And he just wants to be seen as somebody who's fighting for something.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The fuel and exhaust systems inside diesel engines work closely together. As a result, fuel and exhaust-related issues can be some of the most difficult to diagnose. A symptom in one system can often arise from a problem in the other. Here is a common fuel and exhaust issue that might not be what it first appears. Your equipment is emitting sooty exhaust. Thick black exhaust is a sign of a soot problem, which can often be traced back to an issue in the fuel system, a plugged fuel filter. Critical for keeping contaminants out of your engine, a properly working filter allows clean fuel to flow freely through. Fuel filters are prone to plugging when the fuel that has already passed through it fails to burn completely during combustion. This leftover fuel, now chemically damaged, will gradually plug the filter as it makes its way back into the fuel line for a second cycle. To help prevent sooty exhaust, not to mention decreased power resulting from restricted fuel flow, Cinex Premium Diesel contains aggressive detergents that clean your entire fuel system, including the filter.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Friday Radio, he's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I just wonder what happens, because the rulemaking isn't going to go through this week. So will there must be much discussion as this thing fades into a more bureaucratic process at this point?
Yeah.
And court process, where does Biden have to go?
Well, because the ruling, in writing the rule itself, you've got to write the rule, and you've got to write the enforcement of the rule. You must do this or else, or this will happen to you. And that language is going to take a while to craft. That's not going to happen in a day or two.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.